At the very moment in the late 1940s when magnetic tape was revolutionizing the way musicians recorded popular music, two other new technologies were changing the way fans listened to it. In the fourth installment of his series Technopop, The Secret History of Technology and Popular Music, NPR's Rick Carr explains how long-playing records and FM radio changed the sound of music.
Back in the days of the 78 RPM shellac record, classical music fans had it pretty rough. All of a sudden, just under 4 minutes into a Beethoven symphony, for instance, the music would just stop. Because that's all the discs could hold. 78s broke pretty easily, too. Since the 1930s, engineers had been working on an unbreakable long-playing record. One of the very first of what turned out to be the successful design is hanging in a frame on the wall of Jack Holtzman's apartment.
It was done in February of 1946, and it says on the label, Engineering Research and Development of Columbia Broadcasting.
Holtzman started the Elektra and Nonesuch record labels and gave Judy Collins, The Doors, and Queen, among others, their first record contracts. He says that 12-inch disc of dye-blackened polyvinyl chloride, a recording of Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, made his career possible, even though the format started out a little buggy.
It is awful. You can hear the future in terms of the length and the lack of interruption, but the quality was just terrible.
And yet, within a decade, improvements to the LP and its rival cousin, the 45, helped the new formats almost completely replace the 78. Holtzman says one of the things that record companies liked about the new LPs was that they could be manufactured on the same machines that had been making 78s.
Large record companies suddenly had all kinds of excess press capacity. What you ended up with was we could press an entire album on one disc that we used to press on five discs. What are we going to do with all that excess press capacity? Let's find customers. And the customers became the independent record labels.
That excess press capacity made it cheaper to manufacture records. Holtzman says falling costs prompted music fans with an entrepreneurial bent and a few bucks to start record labels that reflected their own tastes.
All love is teasing and love is pleasing. Love's a pleasure when first it is new. But as love grows older, it still grows colder and fades away like the morning dew.
In 1952, Jack Holtzman started Elektra Records to satisfy his own Jones for folk music.
In the early days of the LP, there were perhaps 500 different labels. If you went into a Sam Goody record store in the early 50s, you would find every kind of music imaginable. There was a label that specialized only in Spanish zarzuelas. There were labels that specialized in wonderful recordings of Italian operas. So there was this tremendous repertoire which the major labels, which had their eye on more or less mainstream classical music or pop music, simply didn't address.
In his autobiography, Follow the Music, Jack Holtzman suggests that that diversity of music led to the folk boom of the 1950s and the blues boom of the 60s, and that those in turn led to what he calls the great years of American pop culture in the late 60s.
Yeah, I've heard a funny thing somebody said to me. You know that I could be in love with almost everyone. I think that people are the greatest fun.
As soon as the LP appeared, musicians took advantage of its larger sonic canvas. James Lastra of the University of Chicago says the combination of magnetic tape recording in the studio and LPs in listeners' homes meant that records no longer had to be mere recordings of live performances. They could be something else entirely.
Total sonic environments, artificial sonic worlds are created that are fully complete and fully realized in a way that would never be possible in live performance.
Lastra, who teaches the cultural history of sound recording in cinema, says a Decca Records producer named John Culshaw was among the first to take full advantage of tape recording and the LP. In the late 1940s, he teamed with conductor George Schulte to record all four operas of Richard Wagner's Ring Cycle exactly as written. Where the composer called for 9 anvils, Culshaw hired 9 percussionists to play them.
If there's a scene where a god enters. He could give him the kind of divine spatial ubiquity that would be impossible in real performance, taking the disc as having its own aesthetic, but that aesthetic being defined by, as far as he was concerned, a more perfect realization of the score.
Through a little studio-generated reverberation. Within 20 years, according to Jack Holtzman, all of that excellent sound quality dovetailed nicely with one of the preferred pastimes of the emerging counterculture.
It was a much better high getting stoned to listen to stereo recordings than it was to listen to mono recordings. I speak from personal experience.
While the LP was evolving from hi-fi to head trip, Holtzman says another new technology was doing the same thing to radio. FM was to the old AM stations what the LP was to the 78. It sounded better, and because there were suddenly twice as many radio stations, airtime was easier to come by, and listeners heard something new.
Many years ago, in the days of shellac records, people used to go into listening booths and record stores to hear music. Now the FM radio became the listening booth. And over the years, it changed genres. At the beginning, it was a listening booth for classical music only. Then in 1966, 67, FM radio took up the cause of what we now today would call alternative rock.
Sailing ships on the water, very free and easy. Easy, you know the way it's supposed to be. Silver people on the shoreline, leave us be.
It was almost like mom and dad went on vacation and forgot to lock the door to the radio studio.
Wooden Ships, David Crosby and Stephen Stills, and done this time, though, by the Airplane. That's awfully pretty. Yeah, Wooden Ships. This is KMET 94.7 FM Metromedia Stereo in Los Angeles, and my name is BMR.
On AM radio, songs had to be free of profanity, tuneful, and usually no longer than 3 minutes. On FM, they could be as long and as experimental as the musicians and DJs wanted.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end.
Fans expected to be dazzled by sound, and musicians wanted to make ever more complex recordings. Chicago recording engineer and producer Steve Albini says the music business was on the cusp of abandoning a fundamental tenet that had held for nearly a century.
In even its simplest sense, a recording means that you are making a permanent record of an event. You're not necessarily creating a sound moment that will be used to frighten children and startle the listener. You're making a recording of a performance.
Another set of technologies was coming into its own and inverting that relationship. Live performances were becoming facsimiles of recordings, or becoming recordings themselves. That's our story next time. Rick Carr, NPR News.